Hey, it's Kristen. You're listening to Rational in Portland.
Welcome to Rational in Portland. I'm your host, Kristen. Andy Chandler, who is kind enough to let me co-host his YouTube and web-based show, also on Spotify, Northwest Fresh, is here today, and we're going to do an election episode. Yeah. I promised him I would take the laboring oar on this because he's done far more candidates and far more episodes. It's so much more consistent than I am. Andy, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. And I apologize to anybody who's listening to this if I'm confusing, because I'm just going off the dome mostly here. But I've talked to a lot of people in person about this that are candidates. So
what do you
that's
mean?
That's my, I've had a lot of guests on my show that are candidates, and that's what I'm going off of today.
Well, I don't know a better way to do it.
Prep. I didn't do a lot of prep for this.
What would be a better way?
I don't know.
Some kind of Googling?
Some people come in with like spreadsheets and
That's it. What do you think?
Documentation. I don't know. I didn't do any of that today.
Yeah. Well, I like the way you do it. So you have the half pound voter's guide.
Yeah, I was looking through the voter's pamphlet.
The
county one, which I have not received at my house yet, but I got the state pamphlet. And so I was just kind of thumbing through this, and this is all new to me. So, but it starts with the county, and I think maybe we were going to start there, but
yeah, why don't we start with Multnomah County? Because you and I agree that the county is the most important, honestly. It's definitely not city council, and I don't think it's mayor. County's in charge of homelessness, mm-hmm. addiction, mental health.
Yeah, it's just so important, and I'm glad that you were able to co-host a lot of my episodes about it. I'm really trying to reiterate to people that the county, if you're concerned with homelessness, the county is what kind of the target is to what we need to fix here locally. And it goes without saying, I'm very vocal about, I think the leadership there has been absent and just ideologically dug their heels in. And I'm talking about JVP mostly, but I think if we get a couple more votes on that county commission, we can change things there. And so that's why it's so important.
Yeah. The chair, Jessica Vega Peterson, has been operating, in my opinion, in a fair amount of darkness for a while. I think she is the most powerful politician in the state of Oregon.
Yeah. And not a lot of people know that.
I think it's far more powerful than governor. I really do. Chair of Multnomah County. No, nobody knows that. I don't think, except people, you know, people listening to this and I guess what pollsters would call the chatter class. And hopefully some people who are newer to this are learning that or learning about the county. Cause I came to it. I feel like I came to it too late. Mm-hmm. And I was really focused on things like the mayor, which.
Yeah, it's misplaced focus for a lot of people. I think when they get mad at Ted Wheeler, and sometimes things are in his realm, but a lot of this homelessness, addiction, services stuff is squarely in the county's purview. And so that's why it's so important. And also, I think, like we've explained on our shows a lot, there's this veto power in the county that the county chair has to basically keep anything off the county agenda that she doesn't like. And so that's something we've talked with some of these candidates about, is changing that veto power that the chair has. And that's another reason why it's so important to vote in the county election this year.
Yeah. Vadim Mazursky and Sam Adams seem to have some ideas about how to work around the county chair. And I'm not hearing any of those ideas out of their opponents, Megan Moyer, Shannon Singleton. I'm not hearing a word about how to circumvent the Multnomah County chair from Megan Moyer, Shannon Singleton, not a word.
Yeah. And, you know, we've had Vadim's been on your show for sure. Right. A couple times.
Yeah.
And he's been on my show a couple times, and then I have a Sam Adams episode coming out shortly. So it kind of goes,
that was great.
Yeah. It was fantastic. It was just one of those things, I guess by the time this is out, it might be out, but you can really tell how much experience he has when you talk to him. Because he doesn't seem like he comes off more casual than he is. He's just very deep politically. He knows how to navigate every local government that we have. It kind of goes without saying that I'm personally going with Vadim and Sam for these two districts in the county. For some of the reasons you were just saying, like, I just don't see a lot of enough opposition with these with their opponents to the status quo. Like, it kind of seems like they're either aligned with the current status quo in the county, or they're not opposed enough in my mind to.
Yeah, there needs to be a rebuke.
Yeah,
in my opinion, of the chair.
Yeah,
they're and they can look. Vadim and Sam seem willing to work with her as long as she's willing to try to get some results on some of these issues the county's supposed to be handling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Was that your impression?
Yeah, I don't know. And I was just impressed with both of them and how I was really thankful to Sam. I'll have to kind of recap it when I go through editing that episode, but I was just really impressed with how honest he was in calling out the leadership. I'm pretty sure Vadim was also pretty, you know, vocal about that. But some people, when you talk to them, some guests, they don't really want to talk about that. And it's just like, can we talk about the problem that we have here in the county? And that is, a lot of it is the chair, you know, and I'm just being honest.
Oh, I think it's, in my opinion, it's 100%.
Yeah. So.
And we have a majority that agrees with her. Mm-hmm. So if we can get a majority that does not, that actually comes out and specifically says the things that are going on over there are a problem and they've got to change, then at least we can get a majority aligned against her policies, or just to start voting no on right. some of this stuff. Like, just vote. Can we get a majority no on the budget, please? Just a no.
Yeah. And I was going to shout out, you know, obviously Julie Brim Edwards and Sharon Myron for
they're
being
great.
The minority vote right now. And that's, you know, what we're trying to suggest to people is to get a majority vote by voting for Vadim and Sam.
Because we have Vince Jones Dixon, who we think is going to be aligned in regard to common sense policies.
I actually don't know when is he starting January? Or
I think so.
Okay.
I think everybody does.
Yeah.
Because he
won the primary.
Right.
Yeah.
So then he doesn't have to do a runoff in the general like Sam and Vadim. And I want to address this. I've seen on social media a lot of these comments about how, you know, what are we doing backing Sam Adams? And what I want people to understand is I want the right person for the county. That's what I want. Period. And Sam Adams is not in jail. He hasn't been criminally apprehended or something for these allegations. And I know that those allegations exist. I'm not an idiot. I know that they're out there. But you know what? I'm not going to say one way or another. You know, I don't know what the facts are. I'm not going to say one way or another or claim that I know what happened. I don't know what happened. I don't think necessarily anybody else but the people actually involved do. But what I am going to say is and I'm not making a direct comparison, but I thought Bill Clinton was a pretty good president.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding. I would like the people that I vote for to be people that are completely above board in literally every respect, like a Barack Obama type, where they are just so squeaky clean that there's nothing that anybody can find on them except that they sneak a couple cigarettes or something behind the White House, or maybe they don't eat enough because they carry almonds around in their pocket. I mean, that seemed to be the most they could eke out of him. And I of course we'd all like that, but I don't need my politicians to be necessarily free of some kind of, there's going to be allegations about people, and I don't need them to be free of literally everything. And if I have my druthers, is that what I want? Of course it's what I want. Of course it's what I want, but I'm an adult, and the people who are running, I'm going to pick the person who's best for the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's definitely the most viable, and that's why I'm.
And he was great when he came on.
He was, yeah. And I was going to say, I'll take the...
I was shocked at how good he was.
Yeah, he's super impressive. Like I said, he can navigate all these political systems because he's had all this experience.
The media makes him sound like a moron, honestly. I mean, if I was just going on recent, like his work for the mayor's office, if I was just going on media reports of that, which is sort of what I was going into it with, like he seemed relatively popular as a mayor, then he goes to work for Mayor Wheeler's administration. And, you know, he leaves there in another flurry of allegations, and not the same level, but they happened. And I think the way at least his effectiveness or his policies were characterized were sort of all wrapped up in all that. And so just my subjective thoughts when he came into your studio and you nicely asked me to co-host were sort of like, I don't really know this is going to, I mean, I know I'm voting for this guy because the alternative is just more bodies on the streets and more people dying on the sidewalks, in my opinion. So it's going to be Sam Adams. And he, God, I mean, he really blew me away with this ideas that he had, actually.
Yeah.
I'm excited for people to listen to it.
Yeah, and I'm still surprised that people like, go check out the episode if you're interested. But he started off with a lot about, like, automation and AI and jobs, which I thought was really interesting. I was not expecting that. But you can tell he just has such a depth and a well of knowledge about civic life and populations and community and everything. And like I said, he's definitely the most viable person for that role, which is why I'm going with him. And I have also I'll take a hot take position in that I enjoyed when he was mayor. I know a lot of people probably didn't.
I think a lot of people did.
But I think it was also like I was a younger person at that time, and it just seemed like Portland was in its heyday. And
he was relatively popular as a mayor. I think he would have been able to run again and get reelected.
Yeah, I don't know how much to attribute that to him, but it just seemed like Portland was in a good spot when he was the mayor.
Well, it was much better than it was after he left, in my opinion, in regard to policies.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't know, from that alone, like that, just from a candidate's perspective, if you've been the mayor of a large city like Portland, like that should give you some kind of
advantage
over your opponent.
Right.
You know, and especially dealing with the county, like he was really, really well-versed in how the county works and relationship with the city. Obviously that, you know, being mayor probably had a lot of help with that. But
well, and I think it's important to say Sam's opponent was, I think, helping run the joint office, was she not?
I mean, now that you say that, I do remember.
The joint office of homeless services?
Yeah, I think she had, yeah, it's right here. She had some role. Yes, I believe so.
We're looking at the voters pamphlet.
I mean, and yeah, you can kind of see from a lot of the endorsements she's got that she's kind of on the, I would call, harm reduction side of things. I just feel really strongly that the county is the first place.
She was the interim, interim director of the Joint Office of Homeless Services.
Right.
That's all I need to know. It's a no from me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm one of those people that's like, we should just, like, in my most extreme opinions, I'm like, let's just get rid of the joint office.
Oh my God. Is that extreme? I think anybody thinks that's working.
I would think it would. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I pose that question to so many candidates now of like,
well, what did they say?
Condition that relationship or just get rid of it or any of that stuff.
Get rid of it. I mean, do people, I know I've heard condition, but I don't know what condition, people have said they get rid of it.
I haven't heard a ton of people to totally get rid of it. I think because we're so close to the election
day.
The
dean thinks we need to merge all this. And I agree with, and so did Sam.
Yeah.
They both said that we should just merge all this.
And so did Daniel DeMello.
Right. Yeah. Right.
He's a city
That's
candidate,
right.
But
that was our 3-hour episode.
It's kind of a growing a popular idea that's growing is that we should merge the city and the county to avoid a lot of this dysfunction that we have that we've dealt with for like decades, honestly. I don't know if Kezia talked to you about this, but when she was on, I think it was her, when she was on my show, she was saying the last time they had looked at that county city agreement was like in the 80s.
The charter or whatever. Okay, yeah. Really?
I think it was in the 80s. It was a long time ago, But yeah, it's, I don't know, the county, like I said, to me, like if you're listening to this, going through your ballot or just looking for some kind of guidance, I would just start with the county because that is, you're not going to have this, you're not going to have this ranked choice stuff on there. It's a really simple two bubble
thing.
And like I said, it's the most direct connection we have to fixing stuff in our area is the county. So if you're listening to this, my suggestion is vote Vadim Mazursky and Sam Adams. If you're in those districts, you obviously have to live in those districts.
Yeah, I mean, if you think we're doing a good job on homelessness, then vote in Shan Singleton. Then I guess that's who you should vote for. If you think we're doing a bang-up job on getting people off the streets and where they need to go, then yeah, I guess that's your gal. But I want to talk about Megan Moyer too for a minute, mm-hmm. Vidium's opponent, because she is part of the organization Disability Rights Oregon. And Disability Rights Oregon did not take, I mean, Tiana Tozer has talked about this. Mm-hmm. Tiana Tozer is one of the disabled people who sued the city of Portland to clear the sidewalks. And they won a settlement because the city was not, I mean, it agreed in that settlement that it needed to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act, the federal law that requires that we give disabled people the right of way. It just seems like a no-brainer, but we're so gaslighted living here. Mm-hmm. And we've been living in the craziest place in the country, in my opinion, for so long that this kind of thing gets fought over. And then according to Tiana, she called Disability Rights Oregon more than once. They refused to take it. And then they came out against the law publicly, against the lawsuit and the settlement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been calling her the anti-ADA candidate because of that whole thing. And it's like, I don't really understand her position on that. I think she thinks it's a good political talking point. But when you're openly against the federal ADA laws,
like, she's that's not
a good
policy director
look, you know, to have,
of Disability Rights Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't she care about whether the city's in compliance with the ADA?
Yeah. Yeah, that was
who cares?
One of my big two things against her.
Yeah, I mean, in that debate, all I heard her say was
she was proud to not take part.
Because she thought that it was that businesses were supporting the lawsuit. Well, I'm sure that they were, so that they could make sure their patrons had safe right of way.
Yeah.
You know, to places like grocery stores and pharmacies, which it seems like disabled people should be able to go. Frankly, they should be able to go anywhere. That's what federal law allows them to do. This idea that, hey, a business supported it, so we can't get behind it. And then, honestly, for one second, I need to go down this road. What is the Metro Chamber doing endorsing her? What are they doing? Because the idea that a lawsuit in favor of disabled people that ultimately the city ended up making all these concessions about and entering into a settlement agreement with plaintiffs like Tiana Tozer about, it certainly gives that lawsuit some air of legitimacy. And the idea that Megan Moyer would say something like, hey, a business was for that lawsuit and for that settlement, so I can't be for it, and then get endorsed by the former Business Alliance of Portland, which now, in my opinion, self-loathingly calls itself the Metro Chamber. I don't understand it. But I have to let that go because I'm never going to be able to wrap my mind around that. I would ignore that. And I, frankly, the Oregonian got it right. You know, they endorsed.
Yeah. I didn't even mention that. Yeah. They Oregonian endorsed Sam Adams and Vinnie Mazursky for these, positions, in the county. And yeah, the one thing I was gonna say about the ADA thing too, is I think I can just characterize that whole thing as like, if you're okay with disabled people having to go into the road just to get where they're going, which, as people bring up on my show a lot of our pedestrian or our traffic fatalities are pedestrian deaths, which just kind of contributes to that problem as well. But if you're okay with making disabled people go into the street with vehicles just to get to where they're going, I mean, that's just one of the problems that lawsuit kind of highlighted.
And all I heard from her, the other thing is all I heard from her and Disability Rights Oregon, the organization that she's public policy director for, is, well, homeless people are disabled, to which I say, yeah, and they should be able to walk down the street too.
Yeah, they're, you know, facing those same challenges that we're talking about. And so it's kind of
so should they live in squalor and garbage? I mean,
yeah. No, it's
and then it's on the chair. Then I would say, okay, Megan, what are you going to do to change Multnomah County so that these people are not languishing on the sidewalks?
Right.
Because you're running for a position that is literally in charge of homelessness. So what will you do for them? Yeah. The alternative is we leave them on the streets to languish with the trash, garbage, and tents and block right away for literally everyone.
Yeah, and that gets into
families,
the second,
children, seniors.
That gets into the second big point for me that would never, the reason I'd never vote for her is, and Vadim brings this up a lot, is like she's opposed to changing the requirements for voluntary commitment. Is that the right terminology?
Civil commitment. Yeah. Standards,
which to me is just sends a big signal that she doesn't really have a lot invested in our mental illness problems here and addiction problems here, or doesn't.
I mean,
care enough.
The
to
worst in the country, if not the worst, for not just prevalence of mental illness but treatment.
Yeah, and so yeah, those that and the ADA lawsuit thing are like the two huge strikes for me against her. And I also think that maybe this sounds weird, but I also think that Vadim's experience as a, because he did disability law, right?
He's a disability law judge.
So yeah, I think that also gives him some favorability as far as our mental illness and addiction.
Well, he
stuff.
Helped lead the charge for that ADA lawsuit. Mm. He really helped them with that. He helped pave the way for that and advocated for them and that for disabled people like Tiana Tozer in the media and for that lawsuit. And I think that speaks volumes about his commitment and dedication to getting people who have been historically marginalized where they need to go.
Yeah. And it is I always forget too, Tiana told me this when she came on my show, but it's the largest something population is the disabled population. It's like the largest class or protected class, I think, or something, right?
I don't know.
There's some kind of stat like that that.
That doesn't surprise
me. She's pointing out because, yeah, like through the course of most people's lifetimes, you will have, you know, a lot of people have some kind of disability.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, somebody, you're going to have a surgery or you're going to break your foot or.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, that you're going to be vulnerable in some way. You live long enough, that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to age.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you start out not super great. You know, toddlers aren't super stable. I mean, just it. Yes, everybody in their lifetime experiences some physical vulnerability that makes it difficult for them to get around. And I just think it's amazing to me that Megan Moyer's current position as Disability Rights Oregon's public policy director. It's amazing to me. And then I guess I would also say, well, Megan, what do you propose we do with the mentally ill, since you are running from Multnomah County, which again is in charge of the mentally ill. So what do you propose that we do?
Yeah.
We're not going to triage them.
And I know Vadim pointed out, I don't know how much, I haven't heard her say this, but according to him, she says that the county needs more money, which is, I know you and I feel like they absolutely do not need more money because they have a lot of money and they spend it recklessly or they don't spend it at all. And so that's another strike against Megan, I think. But yeah, that's kind of the county, right? I don't think we're.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not as much as the city, but I think it's important.
It is, yeah.
That people know that the county has a $4 billion with a B dollar budget, plus budget, in fact. And we talked about this when Vadim was on. Sharon Myron, who's on the county, says their problem is they have too much money. Like we actually can't. We couldn't spend it all if we wanted to.
Yeah.
So.
And yeah. It's a Byzantine operation of a bunch of nonprofits that they dole out money to. And there's no database to track any of those. It's just a big kind of mess of money allotment going on right now. That
yeah. And guess
really
who
work.
Was part of that allotment? Who was running that joint office for a minute there?
Yeah.
Shannon Singleton.
Yeah.
You know, who's running against Sam Adams. So again, if you think the county's doing great on homelessness and mentally ill people and addiction, then... Sure, I think you should vote for Moyer and Singleton and vote for more of the same. If you think we have problems in that area and you agree with you're willing to look at the statistics that say we have some of the worst addiction rates, mentally ill rates in the country, and we have some of the least amount of treatment and least amount of assistance for these people in the country, then maybe vote for Sam Adams and Vadim Mazursky for something different.
Yeah. I mean, I could talk so long about, I mean, I'm just thinking now of Daniel DeMille. He always brings up, you know, we're spending like $70,000 per individual from the county to deal with this stuff, which doesn't really, I don't see that reflected in any tangible way when I drive through the city or walk through the city. And also I keep meaning to bring this up when I was talking to him or anybody else, but that's also like more than most people make in as a yearly salary is like, I don't know. Maybe that's close to the median or the median salary now, but 70 grand a year is not nothing. Like, that's a lot of money that we're giving to each person.
For what?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. How many people have to die while we dole out money to these organizations that operate in the dark with zero accountability or transparency about where it's going or what the metrics are? And we know it's not working because we have eyes and ears.
Yeah. And I just point that out because I'm basically talking about the joint office when I say we're spending $70,000 a year.
Because Daniel DeMello is on the budget committee for that.
And so, yeah, a lot of this just comes down to, if, like Kristen said, if you're okay with that and you think that that's effective and we've done, gained a lot of ground, so to speak, then vote for these opponents we're talking about. But if you think we need to make more progress with homelessness, I would vote for Sam and Vadim. Do you want to move on to
what's next in the voter's pamphlet?
It's mayor, and we might as well just do it, I guess.
Well, you have some things to get off your chest in that regard.
Yeah, it is so much of a lot of what I'm going to say, even about the city candidates too, is just, it's all rooted in the county. It comes back to the county. And I was, the reason I was saying I had stuff to get off my chest, I was going to make a Instagram story, but I was like, there's no way I can cram this into a minute because Instagram stories is like 60 seconds. But basically, I've been asked a couple times recently who to go with for mayor, who I'm going with. And it should be pretty obvious, I guess, at this point that I'm a Renee fan. But I just wanted to say, like, the way I see it now is it's basically between Renee, Keith, and I guess you could say Carmen. I don't really think Carmen's in the picture that much personally.
Why? Because of the drinking record and the
scandals and the
allegation. And
like, when I start hearing about that stuff in a joking way from young people and people my age and younger, that's when I'm like, and I've seen it on like national websites for like automobiles, and just because the Tesla thing was captured on camera. Like, that's a lot of
negative press.
It's a deep hole to get yourself out of.
Yeah.
And also I do think it's more relevant, as a mayor, you're going to be dealing with budgets and finance so much more than city candidates or even other roles. But, I wouldn't say it's disqualifying. I think some people felt that it was disqualifying, but I just think that she'll be a third or a second in between these three. And the main thing I was going to say is,
so do you think it's between Renee and Keith?
I think it's going to be close between Keith and Carmen.
You think Mingus is completely out?
I think Mingus, he'll get, 10-20%.
Yeah. Okay.
That's kind of my prediction, but, and then, I'm not even going to mention some of these other people, but I think the main thing I want to say between Keith and Renee is that, Keith's whole mantra, and you and I have both talked to him at length about his plan. But his whole mantra is end homelessness in some I can't remember what it is, a year or some rapid amount of time.
And unsheltered homelessness in a year. Yeah.
And it sounded, when we first talked to him, it sounded great. And I think that's what he kind of banks on from talking to most people, is it sounds great initially. But, and maybe this is just because I'm such a political nerd and I know about all this stuff. But again, like I was saying, it comes back to the county. And I just don't see the connection between what he's talking about and the reality on the ground at the county. Like, and I was going to point to that clip when he was on my show, he honestly kind of was trying to gaslight you into like understanding what the county does and doesn't do. And
yeah, you called it mansplaining, which I thought was funny, which it sort of was. I mean, you just kept saying, don't you understand that the county provides services? Because my criticism of him was, okay, I'm sorry, these people, the people we're talking about who are on the street, first of all, unless you tell them, I mean, recently, in the most recent Oregonian article, I saw that he's now admitting that he'll use law enforcement. Previously, he was saying things like, I'm not going to use law enforcement. No.
Yeah, I've never heard him say.
Well, now he's saying it.
Okay.
That's one of my criticisms. It's just, in my opinion, there's a fair amount of inconsistency in regard to Keith's plan. If you will. And I don't know that there quite is one. because there is a fair amount of inconsistency in it. And I also don't think he's listening enough to people like Eli Arnold who are interfacing.
Right. Every day.
Yeah. Unsheltered people literally every day, because not harassing them. That's actually not what's going on. Because they're committing crimes, because they're desperate and their brains have been hijacked by things like mental illness and addiction. And unless we get our arms around that reality, look, if we're talking about all homeless, including people who are couch surfing or currently in shelters, or, and we want to expand those things. Sure. I mean, I think there are ways to expand all sorts of homeless services, but if we're talking about people living on the street, sleeping on a sidewalk, and all these people that we hear about overdosing all the time. We see them.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen people being Narcan. I'm sure you have too.
Yeah. And we talked to Daniel a couple weeks ago, and he Narcan somebody on the TriMet bus.
He Narcan somebody himself. Yeah.
And I've talked to people that Narcan the same person multiple times in a day. And I'm sure you probably have talked to people like that too, but it's like, my big thing is like, I think his plan would work well for those like young people that consider themselves homeless, but they're really staying on a couch for a little bit. His plan aren't on drugs. Yeah, his plan would be great for that. But then that leaves this huge population of people that are addicted to fentanyl, that refuse services, that don't want the help that's even available, or don't even have the capacity to choose that for themselves.
I think by the time you end up on the sidewalk, you've probably lost most, if not all, of that ability. Yeah,
you don't have that agency.
Most people don't want to live on the sidewalk
anymore. And I think it's just like, those are the complex kind of problems that a real leader needs to address. And I hear the answers and I hear the questions posed from that complexity more from Renee than I do from Keith. Like Keith really, like I said, his plan is a really simplified thing for a small segment of the homeless population, and it works great for them. But it falls apart and it gets completely disconnected when you start talking about the county, because like what I was going to say about that clip is he basically told us in that clip, and it's on video, it's on audio and video, that he would not condition the county to do anything, basically the joint office, I should say. And that's a deal.
Right.
That's
He'll
a
just
deal
give
breaker.
Him money from the city. He'll just keep pouring money from the city into the county.
Right. And that's a deal breaker for me, because it just shows it almost shows, first of all, that he's not even paying attention to what these negotiations and the contract that we're currently in with the joint office, with the city and the county. But it also shows basically the same feet dragging and heel digging. Like, he's more aligned with JVP than
I agree.
Than it would seem, right? Because
I actually think Keith Wilson is left of Carmen Rubio.
Yeah. And anyway, but for me, that's my kind of fork in the road decision maker between them. And also, I just think that Renee has more leadership characteristics than Keith does. Keith is a great business leader, but I think the criticism that this is another Ted Wheeler, this is another Charlie Hales, he kind of is. Like, you know, I know some of those guys have more political experience than business, but as far as his persona and what he's presenting, I think he's just kind of another one of those guys. And he's a nice guy. Like I said, we've talked to him, but I just don't think that he has the capacity and viability in the range of complexity that Renee does. Like, it just seems like Renee's taking these problems head on, and Keith is just kind of taking one small slice of this issue and presenting it in a really rosy way. That's just not realistic. I don't, you know.
Yeah, well, I think as a city commissioner, Renee has a bird's eye view into what's going on with the county. And also he has a bird's eye view into the fire department, because that's his bureau, the fire bureau. And so
he saw firsthand some of the hardest bureaus and kind of the hardest situations from the past few years. And that's one of the things I was just saying too, about like Renee's been like helping negotiate these agreements with the joint office, which I just think is critically important. And then, you know, Keith just saying like, well, I'm not going to condition anything, which they just did with this new agreement, which I think is super important. So that's just a canyon of difference for me between the two of them about how the relationship with the city and the county is going to work. And that's what something I ask basically every guest that comes on that's in local politics about. And, you know, maybe like you're saying, maybe he'll change his tune on that stuff in the last few weeks here. I don't think that's a good sign. Yeah, personally, I don't think that's, a good thing, or that's going to change my vote. But
I don't think coming to some understanding of what the issues are in the last days of the race is it makes for a good, the best candidate. But also in that clip that you were talking about, my issue was, you know, I kept asking, number one, how do you get people into these shelters? But because, you know, and Sam Adams talked about this when he came on, because he was doing a lot of these clearing of these open air drug markets, frankly, that were on the sidewalks and in right of ways and things. And he said, you know, most people don't want to go. They don't. And so that would be number one. Now Keith is saying he'll use law enforcement. But then my number two question was, how do you get them services? Like, how is that going to work? Because, you know, Multnomah County closed that behavioral health center. Just couldn't do it. Couldn't staff it. The people they were dealing with were too unpredictable. They couldn't find reliable staff. They couldn't figure it out. The staff were engaged allegedly in some kind of misconduct or something. And then the people generally were not, no one was equipped to deal with these behaviors. And that's how we lost, like, the quote unquote drunk tank that we used to have, the sobering center thing. We lost all that because we couldn't find anybody who was equipped to deal with this P2P methamphetamine and fentanyl.
Yeah. Well, you just reminded me, I don't know why this reminded me of this, but, you know, Keith, if you ever listen to him talk live or, you know, just personally talk to him, he talks a lot about KPI, bringing KPIs to the city, which is, first of all, is a little strange to me because I've heard it a lot in the private sector. Like, that's a private sector thing that gets used a lot for tracking. It's key performance indicators. It's like, it's basically a way to track performance and kind of keep a log of performance. But the terminology aside, I just think that if he really reiterates that a lot, but it just breaks down again when I start thinking about the county, because I'm like, there is none of that there in the county right now. And he just never talks about that aspect of it. Like, he talks about it in the city, but it's like, if he's not saying, hey, we're not doing this now in the county, like, it just shows a real deep lack of understanding of what's happening there.
Well, he kept saying on your show that he was going to sit down with Jessica Vega Peterson, the chair of the county, and get her to understand his unchildered homelessness plan. And I just kept saying, shh, he's not going to be with you. Like, she, you know, I kept saying, what about the services? And he'd say, well, Multnomah County does the services. And I'd say, I know that. And what about them? Where are they? Because they're not providing.
When he was
and he said they do it well.
He was claiming, yeah, they do it great, which is
he said they that's
not
what they do and they do it well.
Yeah, it's absolutely not the case. And and yeah, it's
what?
It almost gets to the point of, like, this is a, when I have people like this I talk to on my show or anywhere, when I get to the point where somebody just kind of doesn't believe that addiction is like a real part of this problem, that's when I'm like, okay, I can't. I can't take you seriously anymore, because I've just seen too much. Even in my neighborhood still, I get a lot of
you see a lot
livability issues around that, but and you too, you know, you've dealt with a lot of stuff. But it's just like when candidates start saying, oh, these are, you know, families, these are people that are just living on the edge of poverty, and some of them are, but it's like, you have to acknowledge the reality that there's, you know, it's like there was the mom this week that her 2-year-old, she was like a fentanyl addict, and her 2-year-old died or something. And it's just,
it's so,
wasn't there something recently with like a kid being chased by a machete recently too? There, I don't know. It's just,
that was a, what I read was a tweet by Jonathan Mouse saying that there was a guy with a machete who chased a dad on a bike path who had two kids.
Yeah. It's just like that kind of stuff. Like, we can't stop pretending that that stuff, it doesn't happen, and it happens pretty frequently. And that's part of the addiction stuff I'm talking about. It's like, we can't, you know, either push that stuff under the rug or just ignore it or pretend it doesn't exist. And when you have a candidate who's going for such a high position of office who doesn't acknowledge that, I'm like, I'm personally like, I'm out. Like, I'm not down with that. So anyway, that's why I'm I'm in it for Rene in this race. And I just think that he's unwavering and he has a way more consistent message. You know, I've heard some other interesting things too, like that Keith, like, you know, he makes these promises like he did on our show too. He talks a lot about the high speed rail. I heard that he promised at I think it was a Bike Portland event that he wants electric bikes for all, which just made me laugh, like as a mayoral priority. Like that is probably number 500.
That sounds like a Hassan Hates Portland episode.
Yeah. Like, and so I think that, you know, you and I have kind of talked about this a little bit. I think he's a little bit of a chameleon in that aspect, that he'll just kind of cater to every audience he's talking to. And probably most politicians do that, but I think he does it more than most. And that's another reason why I'm not choosing to rank him. But yeah, I don't know.
Are you ranking anybody except Rene?
That's a good question. I may not. I think if anyone, you might hate this, but I think if anyone else, I might actually go with Mingus second.
Yeah. Well, okay.
I know you might not like that, but
yeah, let's take a minute on that. My issue with Mingus Maps, well, one of them is, you know, we've got the Aaron Schmaltz has talked on your show, and he's talked on my show about this Police Accountability Commission that was voted in 2020. In my opinion, it's very similar to Measure 110. It sounds great. Mm-hmm. It sounds really good. But it turns out that it's the type of thing that's going to drive, in my opinion, and according to Aaron Schmaltz and other people in law enforcement, it's going to drive down our law enforcement numbers even further, because it...
That's the one that gives punitive power to that,
yes,
board or something. I'm trying to remember.
Yes. I mean, Aaron talked about how they get a certain percentage of dollars that's commensurate to the police budget.
And they get, that's the one where we get private
millions
security.
And millions of dollars. Get their own private security detail. Yeah. They get to be involved in investigations of officer-involved shootings. They're interfering in bargaining, police officer bargaining. Discipline. I mean, like, pretty... issues they don't know anything about.
I think some people might listen and just be like, oh, that sounds good. But we have, like, I would say a tremendous level of oversight already. I don't know if you'd agree with that. But
yeah, well, Aaron said, I asked him about that. And he said, I said, how many layers of police accountability do we have in the city of Portland? It's difficult to even name them all. I mean, he can do it. Sitting here today, I mean, I can think of things like the consent decree that's sitting in federal court that's probably absolutely never going to go away. Yeah. That will always be.
It's been already, what, 10 years or something?
Oh, yeah. And that was about the mentally ill. Mm-hmm. But it has morphed into such a broad area of scrutinizing our officers on Portland Police Bureau. And I'm sure some of it's good. I'm not saying we need accountability. This is why we need officers, you guys, because otherwise, guess what we have? Private security. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's already filling in the gaps. We lose more officers. We get more private security. Then we get zero accountability. Is that what everybody wants? We want zero accountability.
We want mall cops everywhere.
And they're armed.
Yeah.
I mean, these security guards are armed. They don't have the kind of training that PPB does. They don't have the accountability level. Mm-hmm. They don't have, I mean, there's nothing in place monitoring them.
Yeah. And that's what it's funny, because people, I'm sure you hear it a lot too. I hear from a lot of people who complain about the time it takes for police to get there, if they ever get there. And like you're saying, if we had private security, that would be magnitudes worse than what we're dealing with now. So, but you were saying he had some connection to that police accountability thing?
Yes. Well, so I actually went to testify against it, to testify in favor of some of the amendments that the counselors like Dan Ryan and Renee Gonzalez were proposing to it, to try to make it more, to try to balance out the scale a bit, because right now the balance of power is so far tipped in regard to individuals and members of the public who, the way I read it, consider themselves to be over-policed. And so it's an So we already have, so we have a police budget council. We have a police accountability council. We have gun violence teams like the FITCOG, like what Terrence Hayes is involved with. We have, you know, we have the consent decree. We have these we have these layers of accountability in place. In 2020, my understanding is this was something that Joanne Hardesty, former commissioner Joanne Hardesty, was behind in regard to, in my opinion, she led the charge to defund the police to the tune of a fair amount of money. And that's part of why we don't have school resource officers. That's part of why our officer ranks are so low. We lost programs that we had to gut and cut for it. We may never get back. We may never get them back. And yeah, like those school resource officers, they were identifying kids to keep them out of jail. They were helping resolve things so that they never got to that point. And they could see things coming. They had relationships with the families. Yeah. We'll never get those kind of investments back. They're gone.
It's one of the first things I'm sure you think about too. When people, I was like, we need community policing. I just think, oh yeah, remember that? You know, remember that when we had that? That was community policing.
Yeah, we can't have it because we can't have nice things because we don't have enough officers. They would love to be on the ground getting cats out of trees.
Right, or helping school kids or whatever. Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah, and helping the elderly with noises they hear or, I mean, really anything. They'd love to arrive at an assault not 20 minutes behind. Mm-hmm. Because they have a queue of calls.
Or just patrol. And people always ask, oh, let's just see them on foot patrols. And it's like, yeah, if we had that number available, we could certainly do that. But we just don't have it right now. And it's one of the smaller reasons why I'm also Renee's just very vocal about we're under police. Some of these other candidates are just very kind of ambiguous about that or nebulous about that. And there's just no question. I don't know if you're listening to this and you're still wondering if we have the appropriate levels, we absolutely do not. Like, I don't know how many more times I can say it, but for a city our size, we still have less than we did in the year 2000 when we were a smaller city. And so, if you're concerned with wait times,
Community policing, accountability,
protecting your business or a small business that you like. You should definitely be in favor of more police. And that's one of Renee's main priorities.
And so my issue was what I learned from Aaron Schmautz, who's the head of the police union, is that the city council could send that ballot measure back to the voters. They can refer it. And then after a fair amount of education about what this ballot measure actually did, which is what I think we all wanted, at least I certainly would have wanted that with Measure 110, I would like to have been educated about things like the Drug Policy Alliance and the kind of people who brought us Measure 110 and the fact that there was not going to be an expansion of rehabilitation and detox centers and that the focus was going to be on harm reduction, on, in my opinion, needles, foil, and boofing kits, the kinds of things that Multnomah County is already engaged in. And so, yes, if I had had some education and another crack at 110, I would have, I think the majority of Portlanders, you know, we wanted to recriminalize drugs for Pete's sake. And the legislature, which I think is far left of the general public, did it. So if we had, I feel like this police accountability measure is relatively similar. And if we had some education about what it actually did, I don't think people would be for it. And what I learned is that they could send it back. And so I asked city council to send it back. A number of us did, but I asked specifically. And my understanding is there were two votes to send it back, predictably, Dan Ryan and Renee Gonzalez. And they didn't have Mingus Maps to do that. And Mingus Maps had gone to testify about body cameras to support him in his endeavor to help police get things like body cameras. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as I know, he was very pro-law enforcement. He came into office in 2020, and I've talked to people.
I think he brought that up too. We were at the debate the other day, and I think he talked about the body camera thing.
Oh, I mean, and it was, I was so grateful to him. And I really, most anything he asked, I mean, in regard to what he needed support on, I would have done it. I mean, I thought he was such a great city councilor. And then I learned he wasn't going to send that back. And I just thought, how could you turn your back on the police like this? You know, based on the polling that came out that has been done about that ballot measure specifically, we didn't realize that we were putting anti-police activists in charge of things like police discipline when we passed that ballot measure. Mm-hmm. I don't think we had any idea what we were voting for. And that sounded so familiar to me. It just sounded just like 110. And so the three serious concerns that I know Mingus Heard articulated, because I was there, I was testifying about this with everybody else for basically a full day, because that's what you do. You blow it. You blow that day at city council. Was, look, the budget is enormous, and it's 5% of the police budget, $10, $12, $15 million. Mm-hmm. For what? For what exactly? I mean, if they need it, they need it, but what for? And there was no transparency about that. It just seemed like,
say that, what was it again? 10 million is what we said.
Well, it could be 15.
Okay.
I mean, it just depends. It's 5%.
That is a lot for, yeah, what that is.
But it's regardless of what's needed. They just get it.
Right. It's a percentage.
It's a shirt. And then when I mean, Aaron was on the show, anybody can watch it. It was just in December 2023, and he was on your show. I mean, we talked about the ballot measure specifically. I said, what is the money for? Private security. Is that for the commissioners? Yes. A private security detail. Yes. Their own private security detail. But it's not, I mean, it's not just that. The second, so one is budgetary responsibility. The second is the makeup of this board, because I went to the Police Accountability Commission meetings, and I know that some people didn't, but I did, and you can watch them via Zoom, and they may still be available, but anybody who went to those, and I went to those with a number of people, but they were relatively open about their desire to affect the way police did things. And these are people who have no experience with law enforcement. In fact, they didn't want anybody having any experience with law enforcement or family members who'd been involved in law enforcement to be part of this. These accountability rankings. And my understanding is there were some amendments put forth, and that may have finally actually been changed, because it just seemed weird that if your I think the majority of city council, that if your grandfather had served at all in law enforcement, you can't be on an accountability mm-hmm. commission. I mean, it was just,
when you add up all those rules, and it definitely paints a picture of, like, we're not just taking, like, this isn't like a random jury or something. These are all kind of biased people.
Yeah, which, I mean, maybe ending bargaining rights for police officers. Yeah. The legislature changed an Oregon statute so that the Police Accountability Commission could do that. Mm. Interfering with union bargaining, which is generally regarded as a sacrosanct thing.
Yeah, especially in Portland. People love the unions.
And so those kind of things really concern me. And and the fact that we didn't have what I saw as and just one more thing, people who've had negative interactions with law enforcement are encouraged to serve. So people who feel over-policed are encouraged to serve. So if you just fill it with people like that, I mean, it's important to me that these kind of commissions have some balance to them. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying nobody who feels over-policed should.
Right.
I'm not saying they can't serve. I think they should serve. But I also think, you know, maybe we have, I don't know, a retired, well-respected law enforcement officer, like mm-hmm. a Chief Day, if you will, mm-hmm. who isn't actually the police chief, but is seems to be well-respected by everybody, and everybody thinks is relatively fair, who can come in. But, I mean, a lot of it is, this was all ushered in 2020 when we, in my opinion, we lost our collective minds.
Yeah, for sure.
At least our leadership did in this city. And Mingus knows that, because I've talked to his, I mean, maybe he doesn't, but I know his staffers do, because I've talked to them, and they said they have not slept so little than when they worked for Mingus Maps when he was elected in 2020, because our city was burning down. Mm-hmm. And it was a really stressful time. And my understanding is that he was behind and supportive of law enforcement. I heard nothing but good things about him from police officers. And then when I heard about that vote, I just thought, I don't understand it. What's happened here? And, you know, relatively soon after that, then there, you know, I not soon after that. Before that, I had held, I'd had a fundraiser for him. I mean, I don't know. I know very few people who didn't donate to him. Everybody I knew was supportive of him. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. So, well, so did I.
The one thing I'll, you know, not policy like you're talking about, but I just think, you know, he could have been a lot, he could have had a lot more trajectory and momentum right now than he didn't. I think whoever's doing his campaign did not do good. I'll just say that. He didn't run a good campaign.
Yeah. Well, then there are media reports about how the money's gone. Mm-hmm. And there were media reports about how he hired Marnie Glickman, who is running for city council, who as far as I could see, didn't particularly seem to line up with the commissioner that I knew Mingus Maps to be, who seemed like a relatively moderate candidate. It seemed like he was moving pretty far left, and I was trying to understand it. And that he owed her a fair amount of money, and he was still fundraising. And I thought, what happened to the money? Like, what happened to the money before? Where did that go? I mean, he started fundraising really early. I couldn't wrap my mind around it.
Yeah.
And then most recently, you know, I get his newsletters because I've donated to him. And most recently, I really think that the kinds of allegations that he's making about Rene Gonzalez, the implicit allegation is that Rene's racist and that he's racist against Black people. And there was a Willamette Week interview about it where he said it public. He said it with Rene sitting right next to him.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that. And yeah, if people haven't seen that, check out that clip. Cause that's basically how I feel. I think it was Sophie or whoever was asking him that question. And she just framed it as like, your campaign's not doing well. And now you're kind of lashing out at your Latino opponents. And that's like, that's all I needed to know, is it just like, it just seemed like a desperate move.
The way I read the newsletter that he had sent out said, the way I read it was Carmen Rubio and Rene Gonzalez. Cause of course there were all these media reports about how Carmen Rubio had these traffic infractions. I mean, a fair amount, like license suspension 6 times. Yeah. It was pretty egregious. Then that was a Shane Kavanaugh story. Then Nigel from Willamette Week comes out with a story about Renee's driving record. It's also not great. There's like it was nothing
speeding
like Carmen Rubio's. Yeah. As the Oregonian and Shane Kavanaugh pointed out, hers is unprecedented. It's unprecedented. Especially
it would be difficult for anyone to rack up that amount of tickets and late fees and license suspensions. I mean, you'd have to really be trying to, yeah.
Yeah. And then she was, you know, of course, issuing statements about how she was focusing on her family. And as far as I know, she doesn't have children. I don't know what all that's about, but that was going on in the background. And Mingus Maps came out with a newsletter that said, you know, Rene, the implicit message was, it wasn't that implicit. Rene and Carmen can do all this because they're Hispanic. I can't because I'm Black.
Right.
What?
It just seems
so Mexicans can, I don't think so.
Well, I think that was the Willamette Week's headline too, was that
is so disingenuous.
When he started doing that, was that he like pulls the race card or something, something to that effect was their headline of like, it just seemed like it came out of nowhere. And it was at
did.
The last minute,
in my opinion, know? I was like, what is this?
Yeah. Cause
I mean, it was horrifying to read. Honestly, he's a PhD from Cornell. Mm-hmm.
And you know better than me, but I feel like prior to that, Mingus and Rene had been a little more collegiate or like a friendly.
As far as I knew they were.
You know? So, but yeah, it definitely seemed like a sort of backstabbing sort of thing, desperate sort of lashing out.
I thought it was uncivilized. And in fact, I on social media, I don't get into fights with people on social media. I don't do it. I mute it. I don't hear them. If people want to disagree with me, great. If they want to have a conversation, and it's somebody I know or care about or whatever, I'd rather do that in person. Yeah. Or somebody that I think, yeah, I probably need to listen to them. I'd rather do that in person. But, you know.
And I think I was going to point out too, I think people, if you haven't seen, there was a poll that was like 2 months ago, and I think Mingus was getting between what, like 5 and 10% or something at the time. It was a very low number of the mayoral candidates. And just, I was just saying that because they know that, everyone knows that. And to do something like that in the late stages of a campaign. To me, that's why I keep saying it's kind of desperate and a Hail Mary, so to speak. But
it was so upsetting to me because I viewed Mingus as very professional, and it was really surprising to me. I thought it was uncivilized behavior. I thought it was very Trumpian. And I, full disclosure, I really like Renee's family, and I know his wife, and our families before my husband passed away were close, and I still feel I feel very close to his wife, and I am protective of them. And so full disclosure, I think Renee Gonzalez is a really good person from what I know of him and what I've gotten to know. And it's important. Yes, to the extent we can have leaders with a moral compass, I would prefer that. That is important to me. And that's part of why I like him so much. And having a moral compass means you don't do the kind, in my opinion, you don't engage in personal attacks against your opponents. Mm-hmm. Not, you can talk about their policies.
It's a whole different ball game once you start doing that.
Mingus can talk about Renee's tickets all he wants. All sorts of things that have to do with, that might bear on his policies or responsibilities, or go for it. His votes in council, go criticize it. Please go for it. Talk about how you're different. Distinguish yourself. But this idea that, I just thought, really? I mean, that's your criticism of them? That's what distinguishes you? And that's why we should vote for you? And then he went further. Well, that's all I need to know. So, and if you look at that Willamette Week clip, and I'll link to it in the show notes.
It's
stunning.
Well, the whole interview might be out by the time this episode comes out.
I think it's coming out next stunning.
Next week, I think, yeah.
I don't think this is why Renee is such a great mayoral candidate, in my opinion. And I'm biased, but I only got to know his family better after I supported him for commissioner. So it wasn't like I had this like personal relationship or something, and I'm like championing my friend. I mean, I sort of feel like that now, but I didn't before. These are things that I've come to understand. And I've never known Mingus on a personal level ever, 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 to be clear. I'm sure he's probably a very nice person. In fact, Renee said in that Willamette Week interview, I like him. Like Mingus said, I like Renee. My head almost exploded. Right, I was right. Like, you like a racist? Right. You like a guy you think is racist against Black people?
Yeah. Really? Yeah. They both at the end of that said they liked each other.
But I think Renee's serious. I think he does like him.
Yeah.
He's talked about it publicly. He does like him. He said, Mingus said, no, I do like him. And I just thought, what are you talking? That sounds incredulous.
Yeah, it's quite the 180 to.
That's not credible. Is he racist or not?
Yeah.
And if he's how do you like a racist who you think is misusing his bureau because he's a liar and a racist? It just doesn't square with me. And then Renee, and they sort of turned, the reporter sort of turned to Renee and was like, well, I don't know if there's still likability now. And Renee said, no, I do like him. I do like Commissioner Mapps, and I appreciate his perspective. And I think we do like each other. And, and he said, this is cynical. Like Renee said, this is a really cynical take, and you're reducing it something like you're reducing it to race politics. And Minga said, we'll just have to agree to disagree on that. And again, this is not policy based. I don't know what's going on here, but to me, it's just beyond the bound. It's over. Like to me, he's not a consideration. He's not a serious candidate. Serious candidates don't talk about, they don't call people racist unless they really, I think, believe that. And if he really believes it, how can he like somebody like
that? It was definitely, I don't know. You might know better, but I feel like it was the first, ad hominem type of attack that
in this race so far. Yeah. I think this race has been very civil.
It's been pretty civil, yeah. Up until, I think that was maybe the first major attack.
It was so disappointing to me. So I have a choice. Like I can vote for somebody who's not engaged in.
Well, I was just going to say that what
personal attacks
in the mayor race too.
Supports police. So I'm going to vote for the person who supports police.
One of the main reasons too that I'm going to Renee is because, you know, you followed this more closely than I, but he's kind of like the, I would call him like the post 2020 candidate where he got in as a commissioner because he didn't like what was going on with our school closures and right.
COVID, they were closed too long. Yeah. No, and, he was part of opening the schools.
He's kind of representing this. I'm not happy with the status quo. I want things to change in Portland. And that same with the police, you know, we went through all this defunding and he doesn't like that. You know, he's trying to restore that. So it's kind of this like
he supports fire. He's brought the fire bureau back. He's helped the morale of the fire bureau. If you talk to, you know, Isaac McLennan has been on my show a couple of times. He talks about he supported Renee Gonzalez for a reason. And then he talked in his last episode with Aaron Schmaltz about how that the fire bureau has really come back in a way that they didn't know if they would come back from. And I think in a lot of ways that I know the left, everybody in Portland's left, including frankly Renee, who, you know, right after Joe Biden stepped aside and Kamala stepped up, said, we got to unite around Kamala. We got to vote for Kamala. Renee's a lifelong Democrat. We're dealing with all left people, but I think there's been some messaging from the far left against Renee that I just think some people just eat up and buy that they're not looking more closely into, like that it was a bad idea that schools open when they did. I mean, people don't understand. By the time our schools open, everybody else, with the exception of my understanding, areas around LA and maybe San Francisco, everybody else was open.
Yeah, when you see
everybody,
every academic or every state report that comes out
about
schools now, you see this long-term damage that I talk a lot about. I don't even have kids. I don't know how you feel because you have kids, but it's like, I just feel so bad for these generations of kids that were messed up by the policies in Oregon. And yeah, Renee was fighting for those kids and trying to fight to get our schools back open so that, you know, this there's so many negative problems with, you know, there's domestic abuse issues, there's learning loss, there's all these social issues that we always talk about with antisocial stuff. So, but he was, I would say, on the forefront. He had that group and everything that was on the forefront of reopening those schools, and that's why
at 300
I see this consistent pattern with him of like post 2020 issues that he's really vocal for and fighting for, that I identify with, and I think a lot of Portlanders identify with, like livability and policing. And
yeah, no, I do too. And I think there are a lot of things going on here that like even that get mischaracterized.
Business stuff is a huge one too. I love all the stuff he talks about business because people like, oh my God, I don't even want to, we can get into the whole Live Nation thing, but I was thinking about this the other day and it's like, no matter how you feel about that, I've heard all sorts of opinions about Live Nation, but it just seems like in this city, we have this pattern of like, we could see this crazy growth if we do this thing or we could not. And we've just had this pattern of like, let's not do the big crazy thing. Cause that's big. That's like not good business. And we have this anti-business environment. And I think that Renee could really help. He always uses the word effervescence, which I think is a good word. But like, I think if anyone's going to really bring that life back to the city, it's him. You know, some people might make an argument for Keith, but I think some of his ideas again are not rooted in reality and would take probably 100 years. I tried to tell that to him when he was on our show about the high speed thing. I'm like, California's been trying to build a high speed rail for like 50 years or something. And it's still, you know, it has like two connection points right now. But I think sometimes some of those campaign promises just get out of control. And it sounds great, you know, it's like, but I don't know. The more you know about our city and county, it's just like you have to go with the most viable person who has experience with it, and that's Renee. So.
Yeah, and I actually think I don't tend to like to separate people by sex or gender, despite the fact that I am a woman. But I just think as a mom, I am really grateful to people like Renee and Kim McGare for getting those schools open. He also started like a huge nonprofit youth soccer organization. He really cares about kids. He's got 3 kids. He's married to his college sweetheart. All of this means to me that he's very family friendly. He's very woman friendly. He's very kid friendly. He's so family oriented. I can't think of another mayoral candidate like that.
Yeah.
He's very front and center about how important his family is, how important kids are. I just think that there are a lot of people out there who, if they look for a minute at the issues, I mean, most women care about public safety. Like they do. They don't want to be assaulted. Mm-hmm. You know, they want the police to come if they need something. Anybody involved in the Me Too movement wants to see some accountability for example, sexual offenders. Well, how do we get that? Maybe shore up the police force. Maybe reduce sex trafficking. Maybe keep people from going in and out of tents. I mean, this idea that, hey, you took away, Renee took away the ability of Portland Street Response when they were under the fire department to hand out tents and tarps. Well, that's because people were being burned alive in the tents and tarps. Mm-hmm. The firefighters have talked about this. They're crawling into those tents, reviving people, pulling people out of flames. There are our burn units are filled with homeless people, with street homeless people burning themselves mm-hmm. because of
yeah. And he took these. It's another consistent bold decision making of like. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even in his control, but he was pressuring the county to stop handing out those tents because what was happening, the county would hand out the tents, people would burn alive in the tents. You know, there's abuse happening in the tents, all this horrible
sex trafficking
shit, I would say. And then at the same time, the county is spending money on that stuff. And then the city would have to spend money to clean up the tents that were blocking our right-of-ways and all these other stuff.
Well, and to be clear, that you know, what my understanding is what the county said was, oh, well, our partners are free to hand out these tents all they want.
So they kind of released liability.
It's not like it hasn't stopped. It's not like it stopped.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm voting for Renee for mayor. And I'm not ranking anybody else. I just don't think it doesn't make sense for me to do that.
Honestly, too, I'm thumbing through these pages here and I've never even heard of some of these other people that are in the pamphlet. I don't think you have either, but
no.
Sometimes I'm like, how do these people even get in here? But,
well,
anyone can run that wants to run.
Yeah, anybody can run for mayor or anything. What's our next? Our first district?
This is going to be District 1, it looks like. This is an easy one for me, honestly.
Who do you like in District 1?
This episode is now, but I'm putting an episode out with Noah Ernst out soon, and I told him on the episode, you'll probably hear it by the time this is out, but I call it the District 1 Dream Team. And to me, that is Noah Ernst, Terrence Hayes, and... why am I blanking on her name? Loretta Smith, of course. So those are my three. That's what I call the District 1 Dream Team. Terrence Hayes, Loretta Smith, and Noah Ernst. Those are my picks. I don't know about you, Kristen. But I mean, the one thing I'll say, too, I'll give a shout-out to Deanne. I don't know if I'm saying his name right, but he came on my show.
He came on your show.
He has a lot of potential. I'm just like, I don't think it's realistic to elect somebody that young. And he did talk a lot about national issues, which bugs me a lot. I don't think that has anything to do with local stuff. But I just want to shout him out because he, you know, he probably has a bright future if he wants to keep pursuing.
He's very earnest. But yeah, I mean, I think most people know I'm a real Terrence Hayes fan. I think Terrence Hayes is going to bring a real unique perspective to city council and a fair amount of common sense mm-hmm. to city council. He's been endorsed by the police union, even though he spent 13 years in federal prison for
attempted murder.
Yeah. Anyway,
It's a really interesting like juxtaposition and background. And
he has an amazing story and I encourage anybody to listen to him and just, you know, spend some time with Terrence Hayes and see what you think on Andy's show or my show.
Yeah. I think he's of all the three people I mentioned, I think he's championing the livability issues the best and I don't want to say the loudest, but just the most articulate. I think he, really understands the concerns of people in District 1 the best. I think Noah actually does a pretty good job too, but I think, you know, with some of the diversity in District 1, Terrence really is able to like tap into those communities and just.
I have not talked to Noah yet, for any length of time. He's going to come on the show, but I've talked to him a little bit and I like what I hear so far. Andy, you've talked to him more.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, I talked to him for like 2 hours, mostly about he's really focused on transportation, like what PBOT's done out in District 1. And the people out there are not happy with a lot of the stuff PBOT's done. And it's one of the great things about the new, you know, our new system is that they'll have a voice as a district to kind of say, here's what we don't want, here's what we want. But he's a super smart guy. Noah's super smart. He's a lawyer who does
kind of
law for Radio Cab. And he's also, like I said, very passionate about transportation issues and a lot of the same livability stuff that we talk about all the time with unsanctioned camping and addiction and all that stuff. And also really trying to give a shout out to small businesses in District 1. He feels like a lot of those businesses have been suffering because of a lot of these policies and with the county and the city. And yeah, he's a very articulate man, just like Terrence.
Yeah, so go back, take a listen to Noah's episode on Andy's show. I'll have an episode with him forthcoming. See what you think. Who do you like for District 2, Andy?
District 2. I'll
just say I like Dan Ryan. I like him very much.
Yeah, I met him a few times, and I know I'm trying to get him on the show too. I know you just talked to him. And obviously he's a current commissioner.
He is. He's a current city commissioner. In my mind, he has really, he is the number two common sense vote, in my opinion, right now on city council. It's reliably, if you were looking at city council as if you'd be looking at the Supreme Court, like what are the divisions there in terms of ideologically, how are people going to vote? In general, Dan Ryan and Renee Gonzalez are going to join. Mingus Maps is now, in my opinion, a swing vote. I think he was reliably in their corner. I think he's more of a swing vote. Wheeler's always a swing vote, in my opinion. And in my opinion, Carmen Rubio is much further to the left of everybody else. Although I think that in regard to city councils, this one is far more varsity than ones we've had in recent years. So I don't think this council's terrible, but I do. I really like Dan Ryan. He's certainly one of my favorites in District 2. I like Tiffany. I like Tiffany Benson, what I heard on your show.
Yeah, I was going to say, my two, you know, solid.
I like Bob Simrell.
Yeah, Bob Simrell and Tiffany are kind of my two solid picks.
And I like Mariah Hudson.
Yeah, I know you had Mariah on.
I think Dan, in my opinion, and I haven't talked to be fair to Tiffany, I need to talk to Tiffany. That episode is forthcoming. In my opinion, Dan Ryan's just the strongest on the issues here. And in part, you know, he's a current city councilor. I think he's been very supportive of law enforcement. He's very supportive of fire. He's supportive of, he understands addiction.
Yeah.
He's in recovery.
Okay. Yeah.
He has had a sibling who suffered and I believe has passed away. He has seen these issues really firsthand. He helped start these villages, which I was very critical of. I was so critical of him, but he understands the inner workings of the county and the way you have to get around the county to get this stuff done. Unlike Keith Wilson, Dan Ryan gets it. I mean, he completely understands what he needs to do to get things done at the city level and the roadblocks that the county puts up because he's had to deal with these, do these villages. He's brought back neighborhood associations in a way no commission. Chloe Udalde, in my opinion, tried to stomp those out. He has resurrected them. He goes to neighborhood association meetings. He goes to police cadet graduation. Graduation is swearing
in. Which they do like, what, every month or something?
Yeah, he goes to those. Yeah. And he's very supportive. And I just think he's interesting. He has a gender fluid spouse. He's HIV positive. I mean, this is a layered, nuanced guy. I think he's compassionate. I think he cares about people. I don't think he's a partisan person. Like when he came on my show, he talked about how he loves that this position is nonpartisan. I just think he has a fair amount of experience and common sense.
And has he been the longest? How long has he's been 4 years now or city commissioner? I feel like he went through a learning process with the Safe Rest Villages, but I think
he certainly did.
Like a lot
with
of the
good neighbor agreements and things.
A lot of the candidates and people I talk to, I always just think that's really important to be receptive and be able to change your
mind.
Well,
you know, he came on when Mingus did, so it would have been 20. That also was 2020.
Yeah. So they both have 4 years. Yeah. Like those are kind of my District 2 picks. I'm trying to do three for each, and I think.
Who do you like in three?
In District 3, let's see. District 3 is hard for me because I've talked to more. It's my district, and I've talked to more District 3 people than any other. And I mean, I'll just list all the ones that I like.
And you've got a good district.
You'll have some options.
About your district, but I like your district.
I like him too, but my concern now is that like all those, that likability and those votes are going to be spread out. I've talked to some of the district three
too
candidates
many, like
that.
Candidates.
Yeah, and they're kind of, but we'll see what happens with the results. And I'm not going in any particular ranking here. I'm just going to list off my favorites. And I might, these are actually in order in the pamphlet too. Harrison Cass, great. Kezia Warner, am I saying that right? Yeah, great. John Walker's great. Sandeep Bali, I like a lot. And Daniel DeMello, of course. I'm trying to think if I forgot anybody here. I do want to shout out this guy, Terry Parker. I'm not saying he's one of my favorite, but he's at a lot of events that I go to. And I'll just say he's an older gentleman and he's not on social media. He should be. I wish he was, but he's very passionate about transportation. I think those are, how many did I say there? Four. Those are my main picks for District 3.
Those are good ones.
Yeah. Let's go through them again. Daniel DeMello, Harrison Cass, Kezia Warner, John Walker. I miss one. Oh, Sandeep and Sandeep Bali.
You talked to John.
I talked to all those people. Yeah.
And so spend some time with these people on Andy's show and see what you think.
Yeah. All those episodes are available. And even some of these other candidates I've talked to at events, I just, you know, didn't feel strongly about them. I met Steve Novick at an event.
I like all those same people. I think Kezia and Harrison are the clearest to me. But I think Daniel's appealing to me and to a lot of people because he's very nuanced.
Yeah. And maybe, I don't know, am I just crazy when I say that? I feel like District 3 has a lot of the, well, maybe not. I was going to say maybe some of the super young candidates.
There's a lot of young candidates. Who do you like for 4?
All right, let's go to 4. 4 is a difficult one for me.
Four is difficult.
I mean, I guess it's not super.
It's more difficult than I thought it would be.
I like Bob Weinstein.
I like Eli Arnold.
Eli, of course. Yep. I like. I do like. I've always liked John Turan. I don't know. I honestly don't know what he's doing with his campaign right now. I should check up on him. There's someone else I'm totally forgetting here.
I like Bob Weinstein too.
I do like Eric Zimmerman a lot too.
I like Eric Zimmerman. Eric Zimmerman did a great episode on my show and I like him. He's the chief of staff to Julie Rib Edwards, who I think is one of our most common sense. We've got, in my opinion, 2 common sense Multnomah County commissioners and she's one of them and he's her chief of staff.
So what did I just say? Yeah, Eric Zimmerman, Eli Arnold, Bob Weinstein. Those are my kind of 3 picks there. Sorry.
I agree.
I just feel like I'm forgetting people.
And I like Eli to me. Eli's a bike cop. Eli's pretty nuanced too. He was a big Bernie supporter. He flew helicopters. He served overseas in the military. He has a gay son. He cried on my show when he talked about his gay son being in the Pride Parade. He's one of the most layered.
Yeah, he really is. He's just his
there's nothing he doesn't
Eli's
know about.
Positivity is always,
oh my gosh, he's so
me.
Positive and I don't know how he does it. He sees the most desperate things on the streets every single day. He's in the most dangerous places every single day. And he walks in, every time he walks in to talk to anybody, he's got a smile on his face. He's got a positive attitude. He's got an uplifting story. But he's got hope.
There's also like not a question that he won't answer, you know. It seems like
there's not.
You just fire away any question and he'll just be like, okay. Yeah.
And that's not true about everybody.
Yeah, it's definitely not.
Okay, Attorney General. Andy reminded me that we need to talk about the Attorney General's race. And I had turned off the recording equipment. Thank you, Andy. I think this is important because I haven't talked to Dan Rayfield. Now, I did invite him on through his campaign manager. His campaign manager said it would be a great opportunity. They would get back to me. I did not hear back from him. And to be fair to him, I did not ping him. And I kept meaning to ping him. And I just, some good things about him are, my understanding is we would not have recriminalized drugs without him. That wouldn't have been possible in the legislature. He obviously understands how the legislature works. I think the attorney general position is a very, very political position. As a lawyer, I have some understanding of what they do. I mean, the attorney general is a big law firm for the state, really. And they bring, yes, they do some criminal enforcement, but in large part, it's also a fair amount of civil work. And Dan Rayfield has some, of course, civil experience. He owns a small law firm. And I do think it's important that the attorney general understand how politics works and how compromises work. And I do think Dan Rayfield understands that in a really particular way. And he was instrumental. According to people like Kevin Barton and Betsy Johnson and Max Williams, we couldn't have recriminalized drugs without him. And he understands compromises. That I like Will Lathrop, and I'm going to vote for him. And he was on your show. He was on my show. And I actually wasn't sure until after he came on my show. I think I was pretty solidly going to vote for Dan Rayfield. I want to say, I think either one of them would be an improvement. I actually don't think this race matters that much, because either way, Ellen Rosenblum's getting replaced. And that's what's really important in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I voted for her, you know, but eventually it just, to me, it was so far off the rails with this decarceration stuff. She endorsed Mike Schmidt. I mean, that really blew my mind in terms of, that's all I need to know. And so we need a replacement there. I think either one of them would be a good replacement. My criticism of Will Lathrop is that while he understands criminal law and Dan Rayfield does not, Will does not, I don't know that he has much of a concept of civil lawsuits, which is much of how the attorney general does work. And I also don't know, maybe because he's more of a political outsider in the sense that he hasn't been in office. He seems relatively sweetly, I will say, because I do think he's a very, very sweet, sweet man, relatively naive in regard to how politics works. And when he talks about things like Measure 110 and how there shouldn't have been a compromise and there could have been a better bill, I can't listen to that stuff because I help work on some of those issues. And I'm telling you, we weren't going to get a ballot measure. So we weren't going to get a perfect bill. We weren't going to get it. And we weren't going to get it in this legislature. And I didn't think recriminalization of drugs was going to pass. That only happened because of things like polling, Kevin Barton, Max Williams, Betsy Johnson, Dan Rayfield. That's why reform of Measure 110 passed. I think those are Dan Rayfield's strengths, Will's weaknesses. The reason I like Will Lathrop is I just think, well, you know, we've got, I don't know Dan Rayfield personally. I have come to know Will Lathrop is more of a person, and I've spent a lot of time with him. I haven't spent any time with Dan Rayfield. I don't know him at all. So this isn't necessarily very fair, but Will Lathrop, from what I know, is a very, very good person. And I do like the fact that he has criminal experience and he's going to look at the attorney general's office with a criminal justice eye, because I just think people in Oregon are concerned about crime.
So
that's how I land.
I agree with like pretty much all of it. Cause I could see how people like, it would be a decent vote either way. They both have compelling candidacies. And I even agree with you on their strengths and weaknesses. I just feel like, yeah, if you were to poll or you ask any member of the public right now, they just see, in my opinion, they want that role to be focused on law enforcement stuff. Is what it seems like to me. That's what I would like personally.
Yeah, I think that's popular. I think Will's smart in hammering that home. I think he should shut up about 110. He shouldn't say another word about it. And his focus just needs to be criminal justice stuff. And I liked what he said on my show when he said, hey, I'm just going to hire the best civil lawyers. And so would Dan Rayfield.
Yeah.
Like he was like, he's not the best civil lawyer.
Yeah,
I like
that too.
Yeah. And I thought that was a great answer. And then I asked him about Trump and I asked him about abortion because I know that's a litmus test. And he said he's not going to vote for anybody who sexually harassed a woman. Mm-hmm. Or assaulted a woman. And he also said he said he's not going to touch abortion law, which is no restrictions. And he has no interest in leading a charge against it. And he knows it would be political. Well, one area in which I don't think he's politically naive is he knows that would be political suicide. And I think he also knows the Republicans in this state seem to excel at losing and that he doesn't want to be part of the losers.
Yeah, he's always very pretty open and vocal about. He wants to be part of this new wave of the GOP in Oregon.
Less partisan, and even, less tribal.
I think he even said both parties. Like, he just wants this new wave of
And I think people, we need more Democrats like Dan Rayfield, like more compromisers in regard to things like the recriminalization of drugs. And I think we need more Republicans like Will Lathrop. We need more middle of the road, centrist, competent, common sense people running for office and good.
The funny thing about it is they're, you know, you kind of set up the strengths and weaknesses so perfectly. And even Derek Clevenger was commenting on this. And I think everyone's right about it. It's just, it's almost like a yin yang of like the perfect balance. Cause like if you watch those clips from Willamette Week, they're even really coming down on Dan. Cause he really doesn't seem to know much, if anything, about criminal justice.
Those questions. I mean, yeah, they said you haven't answered the question a couple times. The reporter from Willamette Week did about sex trafficking.
And that's my big, that's why I'm also voting for Will, is like, it just seems like he's so entrenched in the state legislature world that he can't shift his gaze or whatever, his attention to this new role, which is, you know, deals with some of that. But personally, I'd like to see someone who's not so focused on the state legislature.
Yeah.
Which to me has been a disaster for the past 10 years.
And all of Will's criticisms in that regard are valid.
Yeah. And I think that gives Will, it's kind of a strength of his of being an outsider, of being, like you said, he's almost like ignorant to a fault and to that degree of like, he doesn't know much about that world. But I think that's almost like a positive that gets him ahead in some ways.
He has a lot of support of law enforcement. Will Lathrop does. He does not have Aaron Schmaus's endorsement, Oregon Cops Union. He doesn't have the PPA, the Portland Police Association. He does not have, I mean, there are some key endorsements that Will Lathrop he didn't have Kevin Barton's endorsement. Dan Rayfield has those endorsements. So and those are people I really respect, Aaron Schmaus and Kevin Barton. So I think either way in this race, it's going to be a big improvement.
To me, it's honestly one of the most interesting, you talked about this on your episode with him, one of the most interesting races. Normally these are kind of boring for AG, but
it's actually interesting.
I'm interested in it too, because up in Washington, they're also like they had a Republican AG that won like 60% in the primary. And so I'm really curious to see if on the West Coast, we'll have this kind of swing pendulum swing happening. But who knows? I mean, they both have good momentum. Like Dan's going to have like default momentum, I would call it, just because he's established and all that stuff. But I think Will also has.
And Democrats tend to win. I mean, the last time a Republican won was like in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. So.
But yeah, I think Will also has like that outsider momentum, which is, you know,
really
strong. I agree.
And this is the time for that.
Yeah.
And this is the time for somebody to talk about crime. So, Will Lathrop, but this is one race where I don't know that you can really. You can't screw up any more than we already have.
There's not a horrible option, I guess you'd say. Yeah.
Although I know many people would disagree, but that's just how I look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would also, I just want to wrap this up by saying, please vote no on Measure 118. Mm-hmm. I did an episode on that with Angela Wilhelms from Oregon Business Industry, and also with Betsy Johnson, who ran for governor, who was a state senator, and everybody who has looked into this issue, including our governor, Tina Kotek, I think most of our Oregon leaders are saying, please vote no on this. Mm-hmm. This is going to be one of the worst things. If it goes through, it's going to be the worst things that's happened in the state of Oregon. It's going to end up being a sales tax because it's on gross receipts for businesses. And these businesses that operate with teeny tiny margins, they're not going to make it. Like restaurants and the things that we treasure, it's not going to work. So it's not on, it's pre-tax dollars. And that's what, those will go away. The cost will be passed on to consumers. Mm-hmm. And that's the big concern. And so it ends up being like a sales tax.
It's like you said, it's widely, maybe the most widely panned bill I've seen in a long time.
Oh yeah. There is bipartisan rejection.
And it's also like, the way I think about it too, is this would be, if you like that Oregon has no sales tax, this would basically be the first like statewide sales tax that would go through. Needless to say, a lot of people made this argument that we're in crazy inflationary times right now. A lot of people don't know. I always say we're in a housing recession, even though the rest of the economy is not in a recession, we are in a housing recession. But anyway, That's a leading inflation piece in the CPI reports that comes out all the time is housing.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that because we're in this background of
inflationary
times, and this is just going to inflate on a state level prices.
All of our costs. Like she talked about timber costs, lumber costs,
anything that can be sold. Yeah, will be inflated.
That's a great point. That's exactly right.
And also, it's like it's just not. You know, I don't like to overuse the word equity, but it's. I believe everyone gets the same amount of money if this.
It's
thing
not
were
a progressive tax.
So. Yeah, if you're a millionaire, billionaire, you're getting the same amount as any Joe Schmo or whatever. And another, you know, there's so many nails in the coffin for this. It was basically a bill that was from a guy in California. It's like out of state money.
Oh, Democratic Socialists of America are supporting this.
So it's just another one of those like guinea pig experiment bills that's kind of being pushed on the state from outside.
Yeah, if you want to see this state further circle the toilet, I guess go ahead and vote for 118. But it's a resounding no, in a bipartisan way from people like Andy said, in a way I haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know. I could be totally wrong, but I predict it's going to fail at like a
pretty epic level.
Like a 30% yes or something, 25-30% yes.
Well, thanks, Andy. This was great. And I really appreciate your insight. You've talked to more people than anybody I know.
Yeah. And also, I don't know. At the time we're recording this, I'm telling myself, like, I have to stop. I'm doing one tomorrow, but I might get more. I don't know. I'm getting to the point now where I have to just get them all out before the election's open.
You're relentless.
Yeah. So are you, though. You put an episode out today, and I
listened
to, like, half of it. Yeah.
It was great.
Before I came over, that's all the time I had. But yeah, thanks for inviting me. I hope that people... You know, one last piece of advice I guess I would give is if the ranked choice stuff with the city candidates is really overwhelming, just focus on the mayor and the county. Those are easy bubbles to fill in, and they're super important, you know, like we talked about, the county and the mayor. I guess the mayor will be a little more complex with the six
the mayor
people
will
or whatever.
The city manager, so that's important, very important. But I think county's most important. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, thank you.